Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce that farmers can't sell, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. As you can hear, battling through some laryngitis, but I have the perfect guests to help me out with that. This hour is going to be all about local. In the second half hour, we're going to have in folks from Local First Vermont and Phoenix Books talking about the power of buying locally. But first, we have the most local of local talent, Rusty DeWeese. Entertainer, comedic artist, actor, producer, writer, musician, and as he says, master of duct tape and The Logger. The Logger is a one-man comedy show that he describes as blue-collar comedy meets Prairie Home Companion. For those of you who remember Prairie Home Companion, but we all remember The Logger. Rusty's Logger, the live act has spawned 3 Logger DVDs, 2 CDs, 5 calendars, Logger apparel, which includes duct tape wallets, and Logger thongs. The Logger is touring over the next few weeks, and you can check out the schedule at thelogger.com. But first, here's Rusty DeWeese. Welcome, Rusty.
Thanks for having me, David, on the conversation. Great to be here.
Well, you know, Rusty, we do a lot of investigative, hard-hitting reporting, so I feel a need to begin by asking, do you know anything about logging?
Oh, yeah. So people ask me that all the time. I grew up in my teens. Well, I got out of high school. I drove truck for Percy, dump truck, and school buses for one of the other Percy brothers, 3 Percy brothers, you know.
This is in Stowe.
This is in Stowe. Yeah, I graduated when I was 17. My dad was a Greyhound bus driver, so I wanted to be a driver. You have to be 27 to be a Greyhound bus driver. So in the meantime, let's drive dump trucks. Now, 4 years out of high school, I had been playing town team basketball, and I got pretty good at it. And the coach from Champlain College, who was Bob Tipson, when Champlain had sports, came to me and said, you want to come to Champlain College? And I was graduated at 17, so I'm just 21. And I said, yeah, I'd like to. So 2 years into driving dump truck, that's 4 years. That, once I heard I was going to go to college, I quit the dump truck driving and took a job working for Walker Concrete to do concrete work to get bucked up. And then on the off season and a couple of winters, when I got out of the 2-year school, I logged up in Wolcott with Mark Mayette, who has a business now, Triple M Movers up in Morrisville. So yes, I did do logging. I never made my living solely as a logger, and I wouldn't be the guy. I'd be the guy on the crew that the boss would tell what to do, but yeah.
So what gave you the idea to reincarnate yourself as a logger on the stage?
Right, well, quickly, I was in David Budbill's Judavine in my 20s before I moved to New York City. After college, before I moved to New York City, which was at 29, I was in a lot of plays at Vermont Repertory Theater, and one of them was David Budbill's Judavine, where I played several characters, and one was Antoine Lamotte, who was his real name, who David wrote from a guy he knew when David Budbill was cutting Christmas trees when he first moved up here. The guy's name was Armand Gélinot, who just died last spring at 92. I played Antoine And then when I got done that and I went to New York and things started to come out of my head, words, and I put them together as stories, they were words and stories of the working class Vermonter who I'd played on stage, but also had worked with. I'm not a real Vermonter, native Vermonter. I'd worked with driving the dump trucks, doing the concrete and logging. So that experience of hard work as a youngster and the experience of being on stage during those same years when words started to come out of me as a producer, writer, actor, they were speaking from the working class, what we know as the old-time Vermonter. And then when the first time I did two stories, I said to George Woodard, who was doing one of his first Groundhog Operas, I said, George, I got a couple stories. Can I do them at your thing at the Red, is it still Red, this elementary school here?
Yeah.
He said, yeah. So we were backstage, literally, and I'd played Antoine Lamotte, who was a tree cutter in David Budbill's Judavine. And I'm just about to go out on stage, and George likes to do some things last minute. I know you know George. I'm the opposite way, but George's a last-minute guy, and he thrives on that. Just before I'm going to go out, he looks at me and goes, what do you want to be called, Big Red? I said, no, call me the Logger. My first story started out with me on stage starting a chainsaw. So that all came together, and the Logger was a nice, you know, it's a good brand, Nike. You know, Hershey, I'm not Hershey, Nike, you know, Coca-Cola, so the logger worked. So, but I did log.
What was logging like?
It was fine. And you know, it could be 30 below. Here's my takeaway. You're 30 below when you're logging, and you know, you got your insulated Carhartt on, underwear under that. You get out there in the morning, and it's okay, because you're young, hopefully. Some of them guys and girls aren't young, and they're still logging. But you're working, and you're fine. Problem on the 30 below days for my money is once you break for lunch and you get in the pickup truck and you warm up for 45 minutes, it was going out after lunch when that sweat had dried. This is before the capoline, the layers, and you'd go out. That it was rough starting back up. But it's, you know, I like the put the Christmas tree in the house yesterday. Me and Anna and Eric, my buddy Eric, helped me, and it smells like pine, and you smell that, and the fossil fuels that you're using, you're running over hopefully good rows that were made for getting wood out, and it's dangerous. They used to say logging was one of the most dangerous jobs. Now the big fields that they're logging, the guys and girls are in those pieces of equipment that are worth $500,000, and some of the guys at the big logging shows will say, you know, A lot fewer injuries now. But you know what the injuries are now? I say, what? He says, when them guy has been sitting in that seat for 7 hours, running those chippers and cutters for 7 hours in a row, when they walk down off of there, they trip and break their wrist. Some logging landings and places where you're cutting, they ain't even got a chainsaw on them anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So anyway.
So you talked about going from growing up in Stowe, what brought you to New York?
Yeah, so yeah, I was acting in my 20s in Burlington, and then I'd always watched movies. I didn't want to be a Greyhound bus driver anymore. I'd thrown that to the side, just getting away from home a lot. And I hadn't done a lot of plays, and I was curious. David, I was never saying, I wasn't the kid going home from high school reading, you know, Shakespeare and Chekhov and things. I was just a guy that liked to do it. I guess I liked it a lot. And it was inside my heart. Yeah, I didn't know that it was called passion, but it was. Got to be 29. I said, you know what? I don't want to be a landscaper right now. I could, if I was going to stay here, I could be a logger. I could do several things. But I'm curious about how you go from the Hyde Park Opera House stage. How do you go from there to that screen? That guy, how do they get there? The process, how does that happen? I was interested in that. So I moved to New York City to see if I could find that out, and I did find that out.
So what'd you do there?
I went down there, and I called up my mom and dad. I call them every Sunday, and she said, Russ didn't have a job. She said, Russ, you called Brian Smith. Called Brian Smith. I went to school with him. He's in my class. He's working down there at an auction house, and Danny Shaw, Tiger Shaw's sister, who was in my class, Tiger was a class below me, said Tiger is the president of the U.S. Ski Association. Anybody out there listening doesn't know he's from Stowe, but call him. He works at an auction house, And sometimes they need guys to hold up chairs when they're auctioning them. I called Brian. He said, man, a job just opened up here that you'd be perfect for, Russ. It's kind of a, you don't know nothing, but you kind of can get along with it, with things. And I said, what's that? He says, my boss, William Doyle, of William Doyle Galleries, needs an assistant, right-hand man, driver, confidant. It's a really interesting job, and you'd be perfect for it. I went up and met with the president, Michael Shea. Then I met with Bill, and he was going away for 2 weeks to a spa, and he hired me. And for 6 years, I was Bill Doyle's assistant. Most fascinating time of my life. Learned about business, learned about New York, learned about art. He had a wife, Kathy, three daughters who were like at that point 8, 14, and 17. I took them to their high schools, Spence, and their in Andover, and their colleges, and I drove them around, and their girl, and it was an unbelievably blessed experience.
So Doyle was, did he run art galleries?
It was an auction house, David. So yeah, it was like on 87th between First and Lex, like Sotheby's and Christie's,
like Sotheby's,
literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would drive him, and we'd go to the estates in East Hampton, and your grandmom leaves you a place in East Hampton, and you know, what do I do with it? You could call Sotheby's and Christie's, and they'll insult you. Or you could call William Doyle, and William Doyle will actually show up and say to you, we can auction this, 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 this. I'll give you a check for this silver service, if in case you need $15,000 right now to send your nephew to college for this semester. And the hard part here with this estate of your grandmother's is getting rid of the old cat food cans and the bags. We'll come do that for you, David. I will give you a check for the simple patio furniture, for the simple couch. Right now, I'll give you a check for it, and my guys will come, and you don't want to be here because you have a lot of memories here in this house. We'll come clean it out. We'll auction off those 15 items and give you a check for the silver service. And Christie's and Sotheby's are sleeping on it because they only wanted two pieces because the other pieces weren't good enough. And that's how Bill Doyle, it was called a clean out. He would bring the clean out items back to a tag sale that was next to his auction house. The tag sale were items that were probably fairly nice, bought down in New York City, but not, you know, old. And all the decorators would come and buy those for their clients. So I was seeing all of that happen right in front of me. I was part of it, you know, and I was his right-hand man, and very, very interesting.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking to Rusty Deweese, also known as The Logger. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. You can ask Rusty all those questions that are burning inside you as you watch The Logger, but you're too shy to stand up from the audience and begin bellowing at him.
Go right ahead, though.
So, well, this is wild. So you really, this is like the rarefied air. You're going to, you know, kind of very high-end New York area homes. Why'd you leave?
Oh, well, that's perfect. Perfect question. Yeah, yeah. I literally went from pumping gas on the Shelburne Road for Renee Bourne, the Morrisville Bournes, who's married to Sharon Meyer, the weather lady. I was working for him. I went from there doing plays. 7 months later, I'm eating lunch with Gloria Vanderbilt at the 21 Club. Not a lie. Absolute truth. Taking food out from there. Harry was the guy at the front. We'd give him $100, you know, Bill. Rastola, what do you want? He was from Newton, Mass. Rastola, what do you want for dinner tonight? 21 baggers? Call Kathy. On the first car phone, I'd call Kathy. Kathy, what does Carrie want? What is it? Anyway, yes, I wasn't impressed by it. Bill Doyle loved that. I wasn't a, you know, upstarted, you know, American furniture expert who would be in competition with him, or who would go back to the office and cull favor off of some of the young ladies that were working there because I had inside information. I wasn't that. I was perfect for that job, like Brian Smith said. Now, six years into that, at 53, Bill Doyle dies unexpectedly of a disease. I'm 6 years. Kathy takes over. Kathy Doyle, his wife. Now it's Doyle, New York. You see them on the Antiques Roadshow a lot, Doyle, New York. And it's thriving. And she says to me, Rusty, we will teach you to be an American expert, an Art Nouveau expert, anything you want to do. I said, well, I know a little bit about New York now. I think I'm going to give this acting thing a try. I'd been in Jay Craven's Where the Rivers Flow North. In the meantime, I hadn't let go. I hadn't let go of the acting.
What character were you in that?
In Where the Rivers Flow North, I was Champ. I fought Rip Torn. And then I got into A Stranger in the Kingdom, which is I was a Harlan Kittredge. So those things started, and then I said that to Kathy. And I did kick off and start doing commercials and TV and movies. But I may still be Bill Doyle's right-hand man if he hadn't passed away. Talk about a charmed life. I mean, and that may be great. I may be the president of Doyle Galleries right now, just living a different life. But I learned about business. I learned the tempo of a good tempo that is a boon if you're in your own business. From New York, you know, it's just a quick place. And I learned about art. I was informed about so many more things. I wasn't informed about more things than I would have been informed about by living here. Just different ones, perhaps. Yeah.
So what made you decide to come back to Vermont?
5 years into Pat Doyle, after Bill's life, I was on the crew working on. I said, Kathy, I don't want to be an American X, but I'd like to be on the crew and kick in the acting. She says, okay, you can come and go anytime you want, which was the deal with Bill, too. But when I was working for Bill, I didn't really want to come and go anytime. I didn't do any acting. So with Kathy, now I started to get auditions and started to do commercials and started to do TV and started to do movies. Now, my father, critical question, my father was 50 when I was born. So I'm 35 at this time. He's 85. My mom was 20 years younger, 65, living up on Elmore. And my life is here. I never left Vermont. I was just working in New York. I mean, so I felt it was palpable. I would go to sleep at night on 91st Street, 1st Avenue, Heidi Sherman's brother I was rooming with, the oldest brother. And I would feel it when I'd lay my head down. I got to get home because my parents were getting to the age where things would start to happen. And I did come home. I started the logger hit. I remember the day I had my first video. I had made my first video, produced it, spent all my own money. And I remember all the videos in my house and the bills on the table. And it was a summer and I was home for the summer. And Kathy and the girls were at East Hampton, Lily Pond Lane there. And I called her up and said, Kathy, I won't be coming back this summer. She said, well, Rusty, I just want you to know, anytime you want your job back, you have it. But so I moved back because the logger had started and I felt the pull to come back to my roots, but also my parents. And I was here when it hit the fan with my father. It was very good. Worked out good.
Hmm. So making a life as a performer in Vermont, what are some of the joys and challenges?
The joys are the human beings. that's it. Though that's the joy. Humans brings you. I just came from Bishop Marshall, the school up at PA, where I every year I do the read. It was the night before Christmas. I ring my grandfather's sleigh bells and I lead them in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. From that to. Any it's just to the nursing home I was at the other day, to the shows, to so the joys of show business or entertainment for me have been humans, period. The challenges, things have gone well for 22 years. I keep my feet moving, but right now, as you well know, as well as anyone, the social media. So it's not a challenge that I feel in my gut. But it's something there where I want to say, I want to keep the old-fashioned way, the Bill Doyle way of doing business, bring it up here and apply that to the business of show, which is when you called for the auction house to come look at your grandfather clock, Bill Doyle showed up. When you come to my show, the 27th through the 31st, the Rusty and the Fiddler show at Stowe Town Hall, I'm there immediately. If you're a 14-year-old, you don't used to have a 14-year-old kid. You used to have two 14-year-old kids, but they're older now. But showing up, the people want to know you're working for them, you're servicing them, but the people are the reason. But the challenges are how to get those people who will be interested in hearing your show and Patrick Ross, the fiddle player, how do you get those people to become aware of it? 22 years ago, $4,000 spent in the Burlington Free Press. Almost everyone read it, and her, and you know, and then CAX spent $10K on CAX years ago, even 7 or 8 years ago. Everyone heard it. Well, not anymore. You have to. I still have to spend money, not as much on each at each place. Still have to spend money at each of those places. The small local papers that are, hopefully, many of them are still thriving. The larger ones who don't seem to be thriving. I still have to be there. I have to be on social media, too. The Instagram. And you have to be on the radio and the TV. But how much? And I paid a great guy, Michael Fisher, to make 4 promo films that play on Instagram. You have to have a minute-long one on Instagram. Then it can be up to, you know, 5 or 6 minutes on Facebook, but you can't smoke a cigar at the end of it, because, and you can't, if you smoke a cigar in your promo film, you can run it on Facebook, you can post it, but you can't boost it, because when it's boosted, it becomes an ad, and Facebook won't let you run an ad that promotes smoking, you know. So it's a whole bunch more hours of work, and none of them work well. In concert, they might work well if you hit all of them right. Used to be easy, you know, one poster and, you know, everybody saw it.
So for people who haven't seen The Logger, I'd like to invite The Logger in to just give us a little piece of his wisdom.
Well, I was watching a downhill race the other day, and this guy was from France. He's coming down the hill. I'll tell you what, he must have been going 70, 75 miles an hour down there, you know, and he tipped over pretty good. And I tell you what, Neil Bike and Jean-Claude, the girls win this racing GS, Lindsey Vonn and them girls there, Michaela Schiffer, they're racing fast as Jean-Claude Keighley did in the downhill. That's the girls. Well, these fellas are headed right down 75-80. And now you watch that movie Downhill Racer with that Redford feller and the Hackman boy. You see that movie, and ain't got no fences back then. That was 68, I think, 69. Well, you see now in them downhill races, they got three fences, and they need every one of them. They're going so fast. But that's a lot of rich white people like that racing. That ski racing, that's all you see. You go to a ski race down Killington, there's so many rich white people down there that you ain't going to find gluten anywhere in that whole area. I mean, I was down there. I was delivering something. There's 18,000 rich white people down that Killington race this year. So white, the snow looked beige. International Space Station flew over. The astronaut looked down, pointed down, said, look, Mitt Romney's having a family reunion. Anyways, I got to go to work.
So tell me about how you prepare for your shows, and how you write. What's your creative process?
Well, you know, how many hours do you have? But bottom line, just what, if anybody was listening for the past minute and a half, that's it. That's how you do it. You do it. Just like you when you write. Just like the seamstress when he or she seamstresses. Just like the Casey's Bagels when she puts the thing. You start with nothing, and you start. And you let it go. Now, there are all sorts of little things you got to remember. Like, if you come up with a funny joke, like, I don't know how it comes into my, well, International Space Station, I have a friend, Peter Wilder, that fascinated by it, and he always says it's going to go over. And he said, so that's in my head. Otherwise, I wouldn't know nothing about the internet. So the International Space Station flies over, and the astronaut looked down, and the 18,000 white people said, look, Mitt Romney's having a family reunion. Now, I tried that joke this summer on a friend of mine, and he said, that's not going to work. I said, why not? He says, you think a lot of people are going to know who Mitt Romney is? I said, yeah, I do. I said, Paul, see this house, see this property? He said, yeah. I said, you know what paid for this property? Jokes. I said, so yeah, I know they're going to know who Mitt Romney is. It's just like anybody's job, but you have to do it.
So how do you and where do you draw the line between funny and offensive?
Yeah, that's a real tricky one, and you'll see the show, and I appreciate you buying the tickets. I think you draw the line by this way. If you're someone who doesn't want to hurt anyone, the line's already drawn. I'm teaching a class at PA, comedy class, and I say to them, you can say anything you want. You are going to offend people probably over the course of time. If someone comes to you and says, you offended me by saying that, I suggest you say to them, it was not my intention. And I suggest it never be your intention. You can't say to someone, I don't think you can say to someone who says they're offended by something, you say, well, this is what I meant. The offense is already done. If they've been offended by, have chosen to be offended by, it's done. So I think it's this is a long story, but it's the way you frame it. It's the 3 minutes that came before that. It's the 4 minutes that came after that. It's the crowd work you do with a certain type of person. I'm very much not a political guy in general, but also especially on stage. I do have one little thing about Trump that I can stick in there. It's not anti or positive Trump. It does make you laugh about Trump. So my thing is not about making fun of this type of person. My thing, I want it to be about asking myself, how do I really think and deal with certain situations and certain type of people in my life? So I kind of put them out there, and I say to myself in the audience, is this us? Is this us dealing with the blind person or XYZ? So it's really a long story. Yeah.
All right. So for people who want to come see you live and see you in that lager thong
right.
that you sell,
that's right.
Where do they go to find out the info?
Thelager.com. That's a PayPal deal. You can call this number and reserve, and then you would pay at the door. 888. That's 802-888-8838. Or you can try to come to the door. December 27th, 29th, 30th, and 31st at Stowe Town Hall, The Logger and the Fiddler, Patrick Ross, the 28th. If you like musical comedy, there's four women going to be at the Stowe Town Hall singing and dancing, and it's really great.
All right. That's Rusty DeWeese, The Logger. Thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont
Thanks,
Conversation.
David. Thanks.
All right.